When we got back to the house, Mother was sitting on the doorstep with Thomas.
"Isn't it wonderful?" cried Father. "I'll have it if it takes my last penny."
The next day, after making inquiries, Father went over to Scotney Hall. When he got back, he told us that Mr. Cotton wouldn't sell the castle, but had let him have a 40 years lease on it. It was spring when we moved in. I particularly remember the afternoon we first got the drawing room straight. Everything was so fresh, the flowered chintz curtains, the beautiful shining old furniture. I was fascinated by a great jar of young green beech leaves. I sat on the floor staring at them while Rose played her piece to a water lily on Mother's old grand piano. We've been poor for 5 years now. After Mother died, I fear we lived on the capital of the money she left. Not that I ever worried about such things at the time, because I always felt sure Father would make money again sooner or later. Mother brought us up to believe that he was a genius, and that geniuses mustn't be hurried. What is the matter with him? And what does he do all the time? Several times when he hasn't answered my knock on the gatehouse room door, I have gone in and found him staring into space. He has dropped all his London friends. The only friend he has ever made down here is the vicar, who is the nicest man imaginable, a bachelor with an elderly housekeeper. Father's unsociability has made it hard for any of us to get to know people here, and there aren't many to know. The village is tiny. Just the church, the vicarage, the little school, the inn, one shop, which is also the post office, and a huddle of cottages. It is a very pretty village, and has the unlikely name of Godsend. Our castle, I mean the moated one onto which our house is built, is called Godsend Too. Oh, what are we to do for money? Surely there is enough intelligence among us to earn some, or marry some. Rose, that is, for I would approach matrimony as cheerfully as I would the tomb, and I cannot feel that I should give satisfaction. But how is Rose to meet anyone? We used to go to London every year to stay with Father's aunt, who has a house in Chelsea with a lily pond, and collects artists. Father met Topaz there. Aunt Millicent never forgave him for marrying her, so now we don't get asked any more. This is bitter, because it means we meet no men at all, not even artists. Oh, me, I am feeling in low spirits. But there is a bubbling noise in the cistern, which means that Stephen is pumping. Oh, joyous thought, tonight is my bath night, and if Stephen is in, it must be tea time. I shall go down and be very kind to everyone. Noble deeds and hot baths are the best cures for depression. Little did I think what the evening was to bring. Something has actually happened to us. I have sought refuge in our barn. As a result of what happened last night, Rose and Topaz are spring-cleaning the drawing-room. The barn, we rent it to Mr. Stebbins, but we owe him so much for milk and butter that he no longer pays, is piled high with loose chaff, and I have climbed up on it and opened the square door near the roof so that I can see out. When I came down from the attic yesterday, I found that Rose and Topaz had dyed everything they could lay hands on, including the dishcloth and the roller towel. Once I had dipped my handkerchief into the big tin bath of green dye, I got fascinated too. It really makes one feel rather godlike to turn things a different colour. I did both my nightgowns, and then we all did Topaz's sheets, which was such an undertaking that it exhausted our lust. We had real butter for tea, because Mr. Stebbins gave Stephen some when he went over to fix about working. He started at the farm this morning, and Mrs. Stebbins had sent a comb of honey. Stephen put them down in my place, so I felt like a hostess. I shouldn't think even millionaires could eat anything nicer than new bread and real butter and honey for tea.